Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings. Welcome to another segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and of course, we always thank you for tuning in. Wow, we have so much to really tell you about. Of course, we did not air last week. We had a few technical difficulties. You know, that does happen periodically. And we remind you tonight that if for some reason you should have some difficulties, if we should get disconnected or lose the signal or what have you, usually we are able to get back on within a few moments. So just dial back in or reboot, and 9 times out of 10 we'll be back with you. We tell you that especially for this show because very shortly we're going to be bringing a brother on who I certainly have been blessed to have met him and his wife recently and have really gotten to know them, and we are building, and it's just a wonderful thing. And I'm talking about Brother Kamal Kabon. And we're just going to have a powerful dialogue tonight. I can tell you that without even going in depth into what exactly we're going to talk about, but certainly we're going to be hitting on what many people call white supremacy, what I tend to call global white domination. We're going to talk about that, and not only talk about that, but what it is we need to begin to do to a greater extent in making certain that we can neutralize and eliminate it from our midst, from our community, from our families, from our beings. At any rate, before we begin tonight's program, as usual, we always give thanks and praises to our Creator. And certainly we are very cognizant and appreciative of our freedom-fighting ancestors. Okay, let's see. Where do I begin? While we are waiting for Brother Kamal Kabon to call in, I guess I can tell you that last week, of course, here in Philadelphia, Minister Louis Farrakhan was, in fact, in the Philadelphia area and had several sessions, both public and private. And certainly the main event or the main gathering took place on Sunday, which was the 9th, last Sunday, at the Convention Center. I did get the opportunity to go because I arrived a little late. I wasn't able to get on the stage as he had requested. Mr. Farrakhan called me Saturday morning last week, I think that was October the 8th, and requested that, of course, that I be there and be on the stage and so forth. So at any rate, I did go to the convention center. I did. I was able to, of course, hear the presentation, hear a speech. It was very, very interesting, to say the least. I found it to be solution-oriented in many ways. Of course, there is just so much work that we have to do as a people. It's sometimes difficult to pinpoint where exactly to begin, and unfortunately in this day and age, our people are in need of so many possibilities, so many solutions, and so forth. It's just very difficult to look at where it is we need to start at this particular point in time. There's a lot of things going on, of course, but when you begin to look at what's really being accomplished all over the country, it's, again, it's very difficult to gauge that, but one thing that we know for certain, and that is work is going to get done, success is inevitable, and victory, well, needless to say, that's going to happen in a lot of ways sooner than later. Last week was real interesting for me on a personal level because I got the opportunity to really watch some of the political maneuvering that is still going on in our community, especially with Boulay-type people and Negroes that are, you know, still in our midst today. And it's really kind of interesting to see Okay, it seems like we're having a little bit of technical difficulty. We're going to try another board. Just bear with us for a moment, please. Okay, I think we're switching boards and we might be okay with this one. Okay, great. We're getting a good signal now. Okay, what we're going to do is just take a quick break while we make a quick adjustment, and we'll be right back. Okay, we are making a switch with our boards here with another computer. So hopefully we will be able to make this transition pretty quickly. Okay, I think we're okay now. Okay, great. All right, we apologize for that little and. Okay, we're going to try one more time. It appears that we are having a few technical difficulties. So we're going to try one more time, and let's see. Okay, looks like we're good now. We were having a little technical difficulty, so let's see. I think we're back okay now. Okay, moving right along, as we indicated earlier, we're going to have Brother Kamal Kabong joining us very shortly. We're having a little bit of technical difficulty, so hopefully we'll be okay in a few moments once we get everything kind of stabilized. We thank all of you for your patience. Okay, I think we have everything set. All right, give thanks. And again, family, if we should, for whatever reason, get a little interruption or what have you, please know that we usually are able to get back on in a very short period of time. And we sort of anticipated something happening tonight because the dialogue is going to be just that powerful. We want to remind you that we're going to open the chat room very shortly. But, of course, before we do, we want to make sure that you know that in a couple of weeks there will be an event here in Philadelphia that we're calling For Brothers Only. For Brothers Only is a kickoff. It's a kickoff to really begin not only dialogue that will focus on the issue of violence and abuse of our women and girls, but it will make certain that accountability, for lack of a better word, is also something that we can begin to look at along with responsibility. And with that, of course, not responsibility in, as far as blaming anyone or looking at our people in a negative kind of way, of course not. But certainly to know and to understand what has really happened to our people and why. Now, tonight's dialogue is indeed going to focus on that, but before we go to our live line and talk with our brother Kamal Kabong, I'd like to know if some of you have done anything this week or will be doing anything this weekend as a commemoration of the Million Man March, and certainly in preparation coming up for the Million Woman March. So if there's someone listening that wants to share your thoughts about if you heard the minister's speech last week or if you're planning something for this week, if someone would like to share that with us before we go to our live line and dialogue, you can just hit 1 and we'll pipe you right in. In the meantime, we definitely want to remind you again that we will be going into the chat room in about 5 minutes. So if you have something that you want to share with us, in the chat room information, if you want to prepare a question or a comment for our brother, then you're certainly welcome to do that as well. Okay, does it look like anyone wants to share anything in regard to the Million Man March anniversary or the Million Woman March anniversary coming up? I'm going to give that a few more moments to see if anyone wants to add anything to that. All right. So what we're going to do is, I believe Brother Kamal Kabong is indeed on the line. Give us just a few moments, family. We're going to get ready to switch to you live. Okay, we are trying to switch the boards over so that we can get a clearer signal, so just give us a few more moments. All right, I think we have it now. Okay, we want to remind you again, we are going to go to the chat room very shortly. In the meantime, we're going to go to our live line, and as we indicated earlier, we're going to have a live dialogue, a very strong and powerful dialogue tonight. So for those of you who may be a little timid or a little weak, you may want to skip tonight's program because we're going to really go very much into some serious issues. The serious issues that we're talking about, of course, is not only that, white supremacy or what I call and what many call attempted global white domination, but we're going to also talk about some of the causes and the effects of how it is impacting us as a people today. Not only, you know, from the past or from the historical perspective, but also what's happening today and what some of the projections are for the future. With that said, I think we're ready now. And again, bear with us, family, because we're switching a few of our, we've added a few things on to our technology, so it's taken me a minute to kind of adjust to it. But at any rate, I do believe we have our brother Kamal Kabam on one of our lines. I'm going to check to see. I hope this is him. Let's see. Okay. Brother Kamal, are you on this line?
I'm not sure. I am on the line. I'm holding.
Okay, very good. We do have you.
Yes. Okay,
wonderful.
Great.
All right. Greetings to you, my brother. How are you tonight?
Good. Black Liberation Empress.
I know that's right. I know that's right. Well, just thanks. It's certainly wonderful to have you with us tonight. We have quite a few folks listening in. So before we begin, I'm just going to let you kind of share some information about yourself and introduce to our family listening audience, because we are an extended family here, and we, rather than deal with our folks as so-called guests and interviews and all of that, we deal with it in the idea of extended family. So would you be so kind to just share with our extended family a little bit about you for those who may not know? I'm sure there's most folks that are listening to this show probably do know, but at any rate, would you just give us a little insight about some of what you do, what you've done, and what it is you're really now working on?
All right, Queen, I started my change in the late 60s, early 70s, not necessarily as a result of the civil rights movement or listening to Malcolm, But I went through my own experience in terms of growing up in the city and seeing a lot of my friends perish as a result of not having correct life-saving information. And many of them died as a result of taking drugs. They died through use of alcohol. And what I came to understand was that these things, drugs and alcohol, were placed in our community to, as I learned later, to destabilize and destroy the young people. And the young people were the ones that were the primary movers behind Malcolm and Martin Luther King. And I saw the wholesale dumping of drugs, especially marijuana and heroin, in the community. But I decided to change, and not necessarily because I had any counseling from a conscious adult around me, but I just realized, that's R-E-A-L-E-Y-E-S, what was going on. I first stopped celebrating all white holidays, and Christmas was the main one because I saw our people, thousands and thousands of them in the downtown area shopping, and I realized that they had very little money and most were going into debt to celebrate something that had nothing to do with us. It did not make economic sense. That's why I stopped. And then I stopped celebrating all holidays. And then I was also simultaneously in school. You know, I went to, you know, I went to, had a chance to go to college. One of the things I want to point out, especially the young brothers, is that when I went to college, I never missed a class. I went to all my classes. I did all my assignments. I got a chance to go to graduate school. And in graduate school, I did all my assignments ahead of time in some instances. I never missed class because one of the things I knew was that the instructor would always emphasize certain aspects of the lecture. And I learned how to listen to the instructor and project what was going to be on the exam. So I never missed class. So that's, and then eventually I went on to get a doctorate degree in education. I have about 6 different degrees. I have a master's degree, a BA degree, an MS degree, an MA degree, an MED, and an EDD. And an EDD is a doctorate in education, which is specific to education. And that's how I got my degree. But the reason why I got my degree was, as Kwame Ture pointed out, that our people shed their blood in the streets. So how I got, why I got my degree? Because David Walker wrote David Walker's Appeal. Because Ida B. Wells, a queen among us, fought against lynching. And between the 1896 to 1911, over 5,000, primarily black men, were lynched. And I estimate, that's what the figure they give us, but the real figure I think is close to maybe 8 or 10,000. And that's why I got my degree. I got my degree because Ya Asantewa, the great queen from Ghana, stood up against the British, because Mr. Garvey organized more Africans than any other human being on the planet, because Paul Robeson and William Patterson wrote the petition, We Charge Genocide, because Bea Richards, the great actress, refused to take a demeaning role, because the brother Canada Lee, who was hounded by the McCarthy communist scare, refused to take a demeaning role. And this brother Canada Lee was a real strong brother. Very few people even know about him. And because of my good brother, Chairman Fred Hampton, 19 years old, the most feared brother in America by the white terror dominators.
Mm-hmm.
He was a fearless brother. That's why I got my degree, because George Jackson and Jonathan Jackson refused to give in to white terror. So these are just some of the reasons why I got my degree, because our people shed their blood, and those white dominators said, hey, we better do something to minimize what these Africans are doing, so we better let this brother go ahead and get his degree. And I didn't get my degree because I was the smartest African coming through the school. I wouldn't mm-hmm. be so foolish as to think that.
Mm-hmm.
I got my degree because our people stood up against these white terror dominators. So as I learned more, and I was always open for learning, if I found something that was better than what I knew, I incorporated that. So I got my degree, and my wife and I, we decided in the early 70s that we would change, that we would break from this system as much as we could. So we changed our names. And I changed, and the reason primary reason I changed my name is because I wanted the white dominators to know that I was against them. I was not trying to conceal that. I was against them, against their treatment of us. I didn't like it then, I don't like it now. So we changed our names. We changed our diet. I read a book entitled Survival into the 21st Century, which I think is still one of the best books out on food, health, and nutrition. When I read that book, I said, wow, I see how they're destroying us. It's through biological chemical warfare through the food. And the thing that we have in common all around the planet, we all eat. So this is something I want everybody to go and check out if they don't know about Codex Alimentarius, C-O-D-E-X, Codex Alimentarius, where the international groups have decided that they are going to depopulate the planet. In one of my books, there's an article, you can go online and see it. It's entitled Ted Turner Wants You Dead. And in that article, Ted Turner was interviewed in 1993 by Audubon Magazine. And Audubon, by the way, was a brother, and the Audubon Society is named after this brother, which most people don't know. But Ted Turner, ironically, was interviewed in this magazine, and he said in this interview, the ideal population on planet Earth is between 250 and 350 million people. And Ted Turner and Bill Gates got together and formed the United Nations Foundation, which has nothing to do with the United Nations,
mm-hmm.
just like the Federal Reserve has nothing to do with the federal government. And they collectively put together $1 billion, that's with a B, dollars, to launch a program of vaccinations and other biological chemical mm-hmm. weapons against Africans. So check out Codex Alimentarius. And a lot of our people like the movies, but we go to look at movies as entertainment. Go and check out a movie entitled Executive Action with Robert Ryan and Burt Lancaster. They were big actors back in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And this Executive Action was a movie which showed how the government and major corporations worked in consort to set Oswald up as a patsy in the Kennedy assassination. But there's a scene in there where Burt Lancaster and Robert Ryan. Robert Ryan is this actor. He was in The Godfather. He was the cop that beat up Michael. And they're walking in the garden after they show this little slide how they're going to set up Oswald as this patsy. They're walking in the garden, and Robert Ryan says to Burt Lancaster, he said, well, Jim, yeah, we're trying to get a foothold in the Southeast Asia, meaning the Vietnam War. He said, but once we do that, then our goal is to depopulate the planet. This is in a movie.
Wow.
He says, and we're going to depopulate the planet. We have to reduce the population of the world to 550 million people. This is in a movie. So they tell you exactly what's up, but we just looking at it as entertainment. So if you look at The Godfather, there's a scene in The Godfather where they are talking about introducing drugs into the black community.
That's right.
Take the drugs into the to the niggas, and but make sure you don't keep the drugs in our community. I remember seeing a movie. I don't remember the name of this movie, but I think it was in the Bronx, New York, where the Italians said, okay, we're going to start dealing drugs. We're going to take the drugs to Harlem and to the black communities. And this godfather in the Bronx, he's giving a mandate. He says, no drugs here in our community. And one young Italian guy, about 19, he violates that. He's going to sell drugs in his community. The next scene, this young guy is hanging from a lamppost. And that was a message to everybody, all the other white Italians. They said, don't sell drugs to our people. You sell those drugs to the black people. So, and there are other books I can tell you. There's a book entitled Who Needs the Negro by Sidney Wilhelm.
Mm-hmm.
Roman page 11, he says in the book, the way of the Afro-American, this book is written in 1973, the way of the Afro-American will be like that of the Native American. It will be extermination, not assimilation. Mm-hmm. And he says, he goes on to say, and the militants, the black militants, understand the end, which is the extermination. He said, but they mistake the reason. And he said, the reason is not necessarily hatred. He said, the reason is because of technology, that the Afro-Americans will be rendered useless in the age of technology. Then there are other books I can recount. But anyway, we changed our diet. We left, I'm talking about my wife and I. She's a wonderful, mm-hmm. wonderful queen.
Yes.
We changed our diet. We delivered our two of our three children at home. I was involved with the delivery. We had midwives, and that's an awesome experience for a brother. If you have an opportunity to witness and be involved with the delivery of your child, it will change you forever. You will love your wife, your woman,
mm-hmm.
from the depth of your heart. You have never hit her. I have a tape by Dr. Ben. Dr. Ben said in this tape, he said, I've been married to my wife 51 years. He said, I never put my hands on her.
Mm-hmm.
He said, if I get upset with her, he said, I leave. I walk out. I take a mm-hmm. walk, and then I come back. So we delivered our two children. It's a wonderful experience for brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And once we delivered our children, we decided to leave the city. There's a book that I had in the mid-70s entitled The Coming Economic Crash by Robert L. Preston. And in this book, he talked about the collapse of America because of the economy. Now, I knew this was going to collapse, and not because I read Elijah Muhammad's The Fall of America,
mm-hmm.
but because I work with white people. And I saw how ignorant they were. And I said, if these are the people that are running this operation, I said, it is impossible for this thing to last. It's mathematically impossible. I saw them hiring their friends, their relatives, and those who were working were basically on what I call now white welfare. They were not working. So this, I want to just say this real quick before I forget. There's a tape by interview by Eustace Mullins. He has three books out. He may have more than that, but the two I know about, one is entitled The Murder by Injection, about the AMA, American Medical Association, and the other one, Secrets of the Federal Reserve. He is the preeminent scholar. There's nobody in this country that knows more about the Federal Reserve than Eustace Mullins. And in this interview, he says in the 1980s that anywhere you see a central bank, you will see the people in poverty. Now, a central bank is the Federal Reserve.
Mm-hmm.
And all, when you go online and you look at the Central Bank of Nigeria, the Central Bank
right.
of Ghana, you'll see that the central bank is a private ownership of the money supply, and the governments have to get the money from these private families, and there is interest attached to it, and that is the debt that everybody's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
He also says that, I think this is one of the most powerful statements I ever heard. He said in the 80s, early 80s, that you are going to see the dismantling of the so-called middle class. Because,
wow.
And he was right on point. So all of this with the unions you see now, he predicted, he knew that this would be inevitable. And I said that it was inevitable because these people who are in the unions didn't own nothing but white welfare. There's, if you go online, you'll see something. I have this in my book called the Job Bank, the Auto Job Bank. And this is where workers on in the automotive industry, when they're not enough, when there's not enough work for them, they can literally go home and sit down and watch TV and play cards, and they get paid $26 an hour. That sounds like white welfare to me. This was something negotiated by the union. Okay, so we decided to leave the city because we saw the crash coming. We went, and we were very fortunate. We got some land, and my wife and I, we built a little house. We had three children. My oldest daughter at the time was, I think, 9 or 11, and she was involved with the delivery of our children. She went to an independent school. And when we came to this region, she was enrolled in high school, I think at age 12, and she graduated from high school at 15. And by 21, she was a medical doctor, a pediatrician.
Oh,
and
nice.
So we built a little structure, 12 by 22. And the five of us lived in that little house. That's what we call it today, the little house. We had a little potbelly stove. I went around the area. I had a little chainsaw. I cut the trees, cut the limbs. That's how we heated the little building. My wife, we cooked on a hot plate. We had 255-gallon drums that we put in the sunshine, and that's how we heated the water. We had a well but not running water, and that's how we heated the water to wash up and wash dishes. And we did that for 16 months while she and I built our own home. We did not want to have a mortgage because we knew that a mortgage is slavery. America is debt. Debt is slavery. And we worked every day, night and day, rain, snow, sunshine. And I remember two consecutive January 1, we were out in the rain filling cinder blocks with what's called rebars and mud.
Mm-hmm.
And to stabilize the building. And so we did that, and then we added on to the building. The whole process took us about 9 years. And as we got a little bit of money, we got the materials. So we paid as we went along. So we didn't borrow any money to complete the project. And simultaneously, I did get an opportunity to teach at the college level. And I came out with my first book, and while we were building our house in 1983, Black Guerrilla Warfare in America, because I had an experience working with the white dominators, I said, hey, this is a war that we're in. And I didn't know what anybody else was seeing. I didn't know what anybody else was saying. I didn't know all the great scholars and all that. I know what I saw. And I said, this is a war. And I felt like I was compelled to write this book. And I wrote the book really for me. I said, because I want to write this book, and I want to be able to look back on this book 15, 20 years to see if I was right. I know one scholar, he wrote a book years ago, and then I met him about 10 years after the book had been out. He said, oh, I wrote that book. He said, yeah, but a lot of that was incorrect, so I changed. I'm doing this now. I said, well, what about all the people that followed you? So I look back on my book, and my book is right on point. Yes, there's a war going on against us. So since that time, Empress, I have 16 books out, many of which are online and some hard copy. But I wrote Black Guerrilla Warfare. Then I wrote The Food, Health, and You, Why Black People Die So Young. And I put news articles in my books.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wrote another book entitled Subtle Suicide, because that's what I saw our people doing. We were committing these different forms of subtle suicide,
mm-hmm.
and hopefully I can talk about that a little bit tonight. Then after
sure.
that, I wrote the last book. I said we don't need any more books, and I put everything in the last book, psychology, economics, culture,
mm-hmm.
Spirituality, everything is in that book, the last book.
Mm-hmm.
But then I came out with another book entitled The Declaration. And the Declaration says on the cover, the white people and the system of white domination wants to kill you or
mm-hmm.
get you to kill yourself while you are in the process of dying. And they want to make money off of you, off of your process of death, because death is a process, step by step, stage by stage, and level by level. So, and then
wow.
after that, I came out with a book, The Last Black Man Standing, and that has been a play in about three or four different areas. Somebody out in California in high school made it into a play. A sister up in the city did a play, and we're going to do a conference coming up in New York at the end of the, in November, The Last Black Man Standing. This is a brother in the future. You know how we look back and we say, oh, Marcus Garvey, he had spies in his operation, and he should have done this. He should, or Malcolm should have done that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Or Adam Clayton Powell Jr., he should have done this. So
mm-hmm.
this Last Black Man Standing, he's in the future. He's looking back at the mistakes we're making now. And he asks a rhetorical question. What happened to my whole race of people? How were we forced into extinction? And then he goes through this scenario about the things that we have done to destroy ourselves and go into extinction. And then after The Last Black Man Standing, I wrote a book, part one, You Should Be Ashamed of Your Nice But Duped Parents, that our parents got tricked into all these different things. And a lot of us are still into these jumbo TVs, plasma TVs, cars, rims, clothes, partying, religion. So I said, I was thinking about it today. You see, why does a white man call the brother boy? Because it's easy to trick a child.
Mm.
If you go online, there's this guy, Libby, L-I-B-B-Y, white guy. He lures this young guy. I think it might be a brother. I'm not sure. The little boy. Little boy is like 8 years old. Libby lures this brother into Libby's home, and Libby kills him and cuts him up, man, and puts him in the freezer. So it's easy to trick a child or somebody that's got a mentality that's immature. And so I wrote Duped Parents. I said, yeah, our parents are nice, but they were tricked. And this is how they were tricked, and I lay out this little scenario. Then I wrote Duped Parents Part 2, which is very expansive. It's like 300 plus pages with websites and pictures, and I go through everything that's relevant: psychology, culture, education, economics, spirituality, social, and political. It deals with us and the mistakes we're making and the white dominators and what they're doing. Then I wrote, the next book was called The Blackest Book, and again, over 300 pages, The Blackest Book Part 2, over 300 pages. Then the other book is Messages from the Ancestors. I said, we are trapped in the context of white domination, and we got to figure out how to get out. And then I have two other books that are electronic books, and you can find my books at a BB Toomey Casa, www.abibitumikasa.com, a BB Toomey Casa, abibitumikasa.com, a BB Toomey Casa. So these are my books,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, as I said, I taught on the college level in education for 18 years, and I had a community program, an after-school program, where I had my students in educational psychology, work with the children, basically elementary kids, to help them with their homework. And then I also taught at the university, Introduction to African Studies, Introduction to Black Studies. I did that for about 10 years part-time. And then they all kicked me out. And frankly, I was tired of teaching. because I see that these so-called professors, these are a bunch of jive turkeys. They're not teaching anything in the university. Nothing. It's garbage. So I tell my students, I said, listen, see, I bring videos in. I bring news articles in. I bring books in. I said, look, I'm showing you. I'm not just here running my mouth. I'm showing you. And these, a lot of these professors, they are afraid to talk about the truth. There's a great article I have in my book by this guy, Swinton, S-W-I-N-T-O-N. He was a journalist that got an award maybe 15, 20 years ago. Big award. So he stands up and he gives this his speech. And he says, a lot of you journalists, you are afraid to tell the truth. He said, because if you told the truth and reported the truth to the public, you'd be walking the streets the next day looking for a job.
Mm.
These professors are the same way. But most of them are not teaching anything. So I was tired, and I think the only subject that should be taught in every college and university is the war against African people in mathematics, in science, in political science. In every area, there's a war against black people. So then my wife and I, we opened the bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
Because I saw what was happening at the college. I said, this is madness. So let them go through 4 years. And this thing about college and debt, I said, oh, this is the new con. You go in, you get a Pell Grant, you get this kind of grant, you get this and that, and before you know it, you're $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $100,000 in debt. And when you're in debt, when you're a debt slave,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to be talking about black liberation. You just are not, because you got to hustle and get a job. I said, oh, this is the racket. And what they're doing is they are using the families and plunging the families into debt. It's like being a, the brothers? They used to work for the white guy, and at the end of the year, he said, oh, you still owe me money. So anyway, so we opened a bookstore. Mm-hmm. Blacknificent Books and Bay New Cultural Center. Our cultural center seats about 100 people. And we brought in a lot of the top brothers and sisters, a lot of the great minds. I call them the gods and the goddesses. Presentations. And, of course, we brought in Dr. Khaled several times, Kwame Ture. We had Dr. Charles Finch there. Claude Anderson popped in once. Pam Africa was there. Ramona came in and gave a Sterling. It wasn't even a lecture, man. I mean, we really connected with her. She talked about what happened with Move, and I followed Move back in the 70s. We had Dr. Ben in several times. So we had a lot of the top speakers in, but I saw after about, probably about really after 8 years, I said, listen, this is not going to get it. Because I didn't see any significant change in the behavior of the people. You know, they would change it a little bit, but I said it's not leading to black liberation.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that I see a lot of these groups, and I have a whole thing about groups. I'm not involved with any group. I'm not involved, never been involved with a fraternity or sorority, not involved with any civic, no religious group, no political group, nothing. I'm not involved in any of that. And not to say that that's not significant or relevant,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of the groups are toxic. The people that come to the groups are toxic, and they bring their toxicity with them. And that's why the groups get stalled out. They can't really accomplish their goals or their mission because the people always are trying to undermine the leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the subtle suicide. There's a great movie, The Valachi Papers. Charles Bronson.
Mm-hmm.
When Charles Bronson, the Godfather gets killed and a new Godfather, he calls all the mafia together from all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
And he's up on the dais and he says, okay, you know, Detroit, you got drugs and prostitution. This one, you got this and that. And he said, and don't you cross the lines because then we'll come and get you. So while he's saying that, the camera goes to these two guys. And these two guys, they lean over, they whisper to each other, yeah, well, we're going to get him. let him think he's a big guy. What we're going to get him to show you. That's the same thing that we'll do. Oh, yeah, he's the leader, but I don't like what the leader's saying. So I say this, look, if you got a problem with somebody, I would say this in all our lectures. I said, if you got a problem with the bookstore or the cultural center, something you don't like, come and tell me. Don't go and talk to person number three about it. If you're a man, if you're a woman, you come to me and say, well, you know, man, you hurt my feelings or whatever it is. I said, oh, wow, I didn't know that. And if I'm incorrect, I apologize. I'll make the correction.
That's right.
But don't go somewhere else. Say, oh, you know that. So. That's really garbage, man. That's really bogus. That's being a rat. So I don't like that. You go to the person. That's what men do. They go to one another and they hash it out and get it straight. And they don't fall out.
That's
because
right.
They know they have a greater mission. So these are just some of the things that we have done. And we did a rites of passage for brothers. It was very small. We only had about, you know, we had a small number of young brothers, but it was very, very powerful. And we had them go through this rites in different areas, psychological, cultural, economic. They had to cover the whole spectrum. And we could see their development. We worked with Professor James Small. He was one of the Jednas in that. So, I mean, we've had contact with a lot of brothers and sisters over the years. And my wife and I, as I said, man, she's a very, very, she's a little small sister, man, but she really is. And she really is beautiful. I mean, if you could see her out here with the chainsaw and the hammer and helping me lift these, you know, we have a log house, and helping me lift these logs. We had Shahrazad Ali come in, and she stayed with us. She said, oh, man, this is so nice. And I tell some of the brothers and sisters, look, if you want to get away from your madness, you can come and spend some time with us. But I don't like to have people come that I don't know.
Yeah.
Because what I see is that our people don't really come to visit you. When I was young, we would go and visit each other because we loved each other. We were all good friends. But now people come to your house to see what kind of white stuff you got. Say, come over to my house. Let me show you what new white stuff I got. Well, I got this. I got a video game. I got that. Then I leave. I say, wow, look at all the white stuff so-and-so has. I got to go and get me some white stuff. Then I go and jump in the debt, credit card. So I don't want nobody coming to see me because I don't have no white stuff.
Mm-hmm.
See, I don't support people who are my enemy. I don't support them. I do without. I only buy what I need. I don't buy the things that I want or what people think that I should have. I'm a thinker. I think for myself. You know, I analyze. I try to get input from others, but I think about, okay, well, yeah, this is okay. No, this doesn't make sense. If it doesn't make sense, I don't deal with it. There's a very good book entitled The Nature of Nature by Brother Afro Uno. In his book, he talks about one of the reasons that we have fallen is because we have lost our ability of sound, right reason. So this is why you see us doing the same thing over and over again, and we wonder why things are not changing. So because we're not using not just critical thinking. I talk about comparative critical thinking. You always have to compare against a standard. You have to measure your behavior against a standard, and the standard is black liberation. Black liberation is the gold standard. So I use three words all the time: relate, relevant, and relative. How does this behavior relate to black liberation? How is this relevant for black liberation from under white terror domination? Right? So how is it relevant? How does it relate? And these are important words, and I use this all the time as my instrument of measurement. And I have these sayings. I said that black liberation eclipses and trumps anything and everything an African can think, say or do. The only thing it doesn't eclipse or trump is breathing. But black liberation trumps. And if you come to me with anything that's not dealing with black liberation, you can forget it. It's not going anywhere. And then the other expression I have is black liberation is the only philosophy, ideology, concept, and action that will liberate us from under white mind control terror domination. It's the gold standard. And that's, I think, you know, we've certainly forgotten the goal because we have been derailed, D-E-R-E-A-L-E-D. We've been derailed into a lot of things that we think are important, but they're not leading to the goal of our liberation from under white domination. So that's a little that's a little wrap up of some of the things that we have been doing over the years. And I tell people, hey, if I'm wrong, bring me correct information. I'll add it. And I created this whole paradigm that outlines the global landscape, and it deals with and I can give you some of the streams real quick. The first stream coming down is genocide, and I have a whole outline of what genocide looks like. Then the next stream coming down is democide, and we've misused the word genocide. Genocide is when a group outside of an area comes into the area to exterminate a part of the population for economic, political, racial, cultural, economic reasons. That's genocide. When the Germans went into Africa and exterminated the Herero, that's genocide. When the white dominators went into Tasmania, that was genocide. When the Boers went into South Africa, that's genocide. But democide is when a government intentionally tries to exterminate a group within its own borders or within its own population. For economic, cultural, religious, racial, or economic reasons. And not only does the government want to do that, but it gives the green light to others who are not part of the government to, they say, well, it's okay for you to do that. And they don't get a great punishment when they harm, you know, African people. So that's democide, and it takes many different forms, psychological, cultural, economic, et cetera. Then next to democide, and I really focus on subtle suicide, because we are destroying ourselves in very imperceptible ways, meaning we don't even realize it, that, you know, eating this hot dog. So it's just a little old hot dog, or eating French fries, you know, it has this, when they fry these French fries, it produces this chemical called acrylamide, which is really lethal in the body. So it's just, it's little things. I talked the other night, I said, excuse me, there's a piece when you, if you get in your car in the summertime, they tell you don't turn on the air conditioning right away. Let the car run for a little while, about 5 minutes or so, roll down the windows, then you turn on the air, because that Freon is deadly. So it's little things like that that will destroy a person and put them in the dominator's hospital, which is a place you want to really avoid. So subtle suicide takes many different forms, you know, buying your child a white doll, perming your hair, thinking yourself a minority, you know, all that psychological. Then there are cultural things, celebrating white holidays, having a European name, wanting a white wedding, you know, $25,000 wedding to show off. For what? Take that money and invest it in something that's gonna appreciate, not depreciate. So these are just some of the things, Empress, that these are some of my views. And I have to say, I have to give a disclaimer. What I'm saying tonight in no way reflects the views of your program, your staff, your administration. These are my views. and mine alone. I'm not advocating anything. You know, I'm just reporting what I have seen.
Well, brother, let me just say this, and I intentionally kept very quiet because I wanted our people to hear you. I wanted them to hear you fully. And let me just say that while I appreciate the disclaimer, we don't need it. Not only do we not need it, we want you to know that one of the reasons why I invited you on our radio program tonight and certainly look forward to having you on in the future is because we need real dialogue nowadays. We need information and we need conversation that not only makes sense, but that can help to provide some kind of clarity, insight, and reality today.
Mm-hmm.
So I certainly appreciate all of what you've said. And not only that, my brother, I realize, you know, that we've got to begin to share more of this information with one another because we need solutions.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And what you are saying is not just stuff that you think, believe, or heard. You're saying things that you actually have done, and it has worked for you.
Right.
And so even though, you know, you're saying, well, okay, this is your views and so forth and so on, well, we are truly a people, and certainly my staff, myself, we strongly believe each one does, in fact, teach one.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we've got to make certain that we share our experiences. There are things that I have done that I've shared with others, and it has helped them, and
right.
vice versa. So this is how this thing goes, and certainly if we don't do it, it won't get done because what we're now finding is there's so much weak stuff out there now.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, it is so important that we bring forward information that does have a certain type of momentum, that does have a certain type of oomph to it, because all of this madness, all of this weak behind stuff that's going on now, it really is not only insanity, it is, as you said, suicide. This thing that's happening amongst us in our community that is supposed to be representing black culture or African culture or you know, progressive thought or whatever, it is just some of the most asinine things that I've seen since I've been on this planet.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You see.
Right.
So, you know, so we've got to call, as they say, spades spades,
mm-hmm.
and make it very clear that some of us not only are not buying into it, will not buy into it, and I certainly, again, appreciate the conversation, the information, because we need to be able to grow and develop, and that's what we're talking about here at New Day Resurrection and Liberation. We're sharing information that certainly some will be able to utilize. Some may not be ready for it right now. That's not to say you won't be ready for it later, you know. And so, needless to say, that's the kind of show this is, brother. Folks that tune into this show know this is no nonsense. This is not a lot of fluff.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not here for that. There's thousands of shows that you can get that on.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We're not doing it here. So please proceed.
Okay. Well, one of the things I say, if you look at this paradigm, I was saying this, the stream coming down is a genocide and democide. There's a subtle suicide stream. And I was really thinking about it. I said, man, I'm looking at the people and they're really committing, you know, we're really committing to different forms of subtle suicide. I mean, we are living in a death zone. You see, the white dominators make death taste sweet. They make death taste sweet, and we love death, but we don't realize it's death.
Wow.
See, we don't realize, man, I'm a beat this sister. I tell a brother, I said, man, don't hit that sister.
Mm-hmm.
I tell a brother a couple of things. I said, never fight over a woman, never hit a woman, never fight over money. I said, if somebody owes you money, walk away. You ask them for it, they don't want to give it to you, leave it. Because it's going to escalate into a serious problem. So I said, brother, don't hit that sister. I said, okay, let me tell you what. You can hit her. Yeah, you can hit her. But first, before you hit her, I want you to get up. I want you to go outside. I want you to find the first cop, the first white cop you see, I want you to smack him in the face. When you smack him, then you can go and then you can beat your woman. But until you smack that cop, keep your hands off of that sister. You have no right to put your hands on her. None at all. And so the death is made sweet, and we love it. I listen to the little radio program down here. They have these same stations all over the country. Every commercial is going to the concert, or somebody saying, "Well, I'm here at so and so auto shop. Come on down and get a prize and get your, you know, a year free interest and all that to buy one of these garbage cars." Man, get out of here. You can't give me one of them cars, man. I saw a Negro one time. I was in Harlem, man. He drives by in a Bentley. I said, "Man, where you going in a Bentley? You in Harlem. Where you coming from and where you going in this Bentley? You a clown, man. You ain't doing All you're
That's
doing
right.
is supporting the white dominators. You can't give me that garbage." And when we had the store, I tell brothers coming, "Hey, man, you want to buy this?" I say, "Hey, man, you take that out of here. I don't buy anything that off the street, period. End of story. I don't care if it's a gold brick. It doesn't matter." Mm-hmm. And I learned that from Ina Mozak from Liberation Bookstore in Harlem years ago. I was in there,
mm-hmm.
and this
mm-hmm.
brother comes in with something, I don't know, stereo or something, and she's, mm-hmm. and she didn't buy it. And when the guy left, she said, "I don't buy it because if I bought it, then that would reinforce him, and he'll go somewhere else and steal from somebody black who don't have anything anyway."
Mm-hmm.
So I learned that. See, that's what I mean. When I learn something, I incorporate that. So that happened like, what, 30 years ago. But I stick to that. I have rules that I follow. See, I try not to break my rules. They are rules that I have. That's how I operate. I'm not bumbling around, you know, doing this, doing that. Now, you come to me, man, you better come straight. And don't bring garbage. I'm serious. Don't bring garbage to me.
Mm-hmm.
So, and when people come to me, a brother called me. He said, "Hey, man, we want to move into the area. And so-and-so told me to call you." He said, "Because you'll tell me the truth about it." I said, "Okay, yeah, you're right. I will tell you the truth. I'm not going to lie to you. And
mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you all the facts. I'm going to give you the evidence." See, our people don't like, there's four things we don't like. We don't like facts. We don't like knowledge. We don't like correct life-saving information or sound
mm-hmm.
right reason. So what we do, we're into our little fiefdoms. You know, we like our little things. "Oh, I'm doing this. Oh, this is what I'm doing."
Mm-hmm.
But you know how I know they know intuitively it's incorrect? Because they never ask an independent person, "What do you think about what I'm doing?"
Mm.
Now, I know in Philadelphia, and like in the other cities, there's always been this clamoring for a civilian review board.
Mm-hmm.
Because they say the police internal affairs, they can't evaluate or assess other police.
That's right.
Because they're not impartial.
Mm-hmm.
If you go online, you check out this story. About 2 or 3 months ago, there was a ruling in California condoning homosexual unions.
Mm-hmm.
They found out later on, and it was a big ruling because it set the stage for other rulings, such rulings.
Mm-hmm.
They found out a couple of months later that the judge who made the ruling was homosexual. He had a male lover.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't. So they said, "Hey, you're not impartial." So that's what we have to do. We have to get an independent third party in terms of being impartial, who has correct life saving information to evaluate what we're doing. So he said,
"Wow,
brother." And if you don't ask somebody, well, what I ask people all the time, if I give a little presentation, I said, "Well, what do you think?" If I'm teaching in class, "Well, what do you think of this? What do you think about what I presented?" Because I'm always getting feedback. I want to get feedback. Because
mm-hmm.
if I'm off, I want to make the correction. So in the different things that we do, it's very important to ask people, "Well, what do you think of this that
mm-hmm.
I'm doing? Am I on point, or do you think I'm off?" But see, we're so invested emotionally in the things that we're doing, even though they are death things, not leading anything. And when I say not leading to anything, I ask, what is this designed to produce?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you know when it is produced? Is there a time limit, or is this like a never-ending thing? You got to come to a conclusion about some of this stuff. Is it working or is it not working? What's your time frame?
That's right.
So,
you know, so Bob, you are really hitting on some points tonight that, and I'm just so, so glad to hear it, because it's really time that we kind of focus and really begin to target some of these things that we've been talking about, but yet haven't really come to the point of setting up timetables and setting up ways of accountability. And this is something, of course, that you and I and your beautiful wife have talked about, and certainly those who are listening, many of you, I'm sure, have felt the same thing and with that, you know, have wondered, when are we going to do it? Well, obviously, the time is now upon us, because we are, in fact, talking about codes of conduct. You know, this is something that when the brothers come together here in Philadelphia on the 28th and 29th, this is one of the things that I am requesting of those men who feel moved to come together, is to begin to put together a code of conduct at this point in time specifically for brothers. And certainly some of the things that you mentioned tonight, Mama Kamal, are truly some of the things that must be looked at a lot closer. Even when you talked about Dr. Ben, certainly a lot of folks are students or readers of Dr. Ben. Well, here's something that's been said tonight that needs to be looked at and incorporated in our day-to-day practices, and that is, and Dr. Ben saying that he has never put his hands on his wife.
That's right.
So these are codes of conduct that we have to begin to agree upon, regardless of what particular ideology you may have. We have to begin to define, what is it to really be African today?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it really comes down to. What does that mean? We've got to take away some of this ambiguity,
mm-hmm,
and really get to some very specific things. And certainly this dialogue and future dialogues, I think, is going to be very helpful in helping to bring some clarity to that.
Okay, good, good. Well, this, I'm looking at these streams. I mentioned genocide, democide, subtle suicide, and I was wondering, well, what is the link to cause us to commit these different forms of subtle suicide?
Mm-hmm.
I got a great picture that was in, I think it was Essence magazine. It was in color, and it was this sister with this short, natural, beautiful black skin, you know, melanated, sable skin, and she's got a palm open, and she's sliding this blue contact into her eyes. I love it. It's a great, great picture. I said, wow, this is really subtle suicide here. So there are different forms of subtle suicide, and I really want to emphasize this, that we are destroying ourselves,
mm-hmm,
and we don't even realize it. We're doing it on behalf of the dominators.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, and the link between democide, that's external, that's what they're doing to us,
mm-hmm,
and subtle suicide is what we're doing to ourselves. That's internal. The
mm-hmm
link is between both of them is what I call the wrong concept. And the concept is the baseline for everything. And what the white dominators do, they implant these concepts into
right
us.
Mm-hmm.
And we get on automatic mind control self-destruct.
Mm-hmm.
And they implant these concepts, and they do it in different ways. One, I say, is through propaganda. It's through, you know, of course, television. And
mm-hmm
there are at least seven propaganda techniques. One, for example, is called testimonial. And I used
mm-hmm
to have my students, they used to have to go and, as an assignment, and find the different propaganda techniques, find magazines, and cut out the, you know, the ad. I tell them, don't go to the library and cut out their magazine, but get a magazine, cut out the ad, and show and then explain why you think this is so-and-so. So testimonial is where the white dominators will get someone famous, like an athlete or a singer, to advertise their product.
Right.
And what we do, we associate that athlete with the product, and so we think the product is good.
Right, right.
For example, I don't know if you remember this commercial with Michael Jordan and the Tasmanian Devil.
Right.
And a student had a shirt on with this Tasmanian Devil. I said, man, do you know the history of this Tasmanian Devil? And the real devil is the white dominator.
That's
right.
No,
I didn't know that. Then another student, he had a Coors baseball cap on. I said, do you know about Coors? I have an article in one of my books, Alfred Coors. Years ago, he was the head or chairman of Coors Beer. And
right.
he gave this lecture where to black businessmen where he says, the best thing that ever happened to you black people is that my white ancestors went to Africa and kidnapped your ancestors and brought them in chains. And now that's why you are here today. This is Coors.
Mm.
And there was such an uproar over his statement that what they did, what the Coors Beer did, they started funding all these different programs, like basketball leagues and all kind of scholarships. Oh, man. I said, man, you have to know the history of the things that you are doing.
And you know, Bubba, it's so interesting that you're mentioning about the corporations. I just want to kind of add a sidebar to that. And then we're going to go to some of our callers because I see some of you are putting up that you want to ask some questions. So give us a few moments. But I want to go to a sidebar for a moment because I mentioned earlier on about some very interesting things happening here in Philadelphia. And one of the things that we've noticed as we examined struggle, African liberation, black liberation over the past 15, 20 years in particular, and that is this thing that people have to do, it seems, to obtain this corporate money, this funding. It's like they can't do anything unless they're getting some corporate dollars.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, here in Philadelphia, what we found out just last week, that there are roughly 20 major sponsors, including Wells Fargo, Comcast, Clear Channel, all of the local newspapers. They are sponsoring something known as the Pennsylvania Conference for Women here in Philadelphia on, would you believe, on October the 25th, which, of course, is the actual anniversary day of the Million Woman March.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, the interesting thing about that is not only do you have around 20 different major sponsors, when I looked further to see who else was involved in this madness, because I knew immediately for them to have a conference of that caliber on a Tuesday, and it'd be one day, and have Gloria Steinem and all these other white females, I knew that something was up, and it was very intentional. Mm. Nevertheless, I looked further, and what did I see? The African American Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah, sure.
The Deltas.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And it all became very, very clear.
Right.
So what we now know is that as the lines are being drawn in the sand, and they are, family, we know that at some point we're going to have to really turn away from the banana that's being dangled in front of us. Some say carrot, but you know, I'm going to say banana because we know what these people really think of us and what they're really doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a diversion. It doesn't mean that we should not get whatever we can get from them, but at what price?
Right.
You
exactly. You're right on point.
If it really compromises to the degree where you're not accomplishing anything that's really self-determined or really dealing with liberation, then you need to think twice about it.
Yeah. There was that's very interesting because, you know, a lot of brothers and sisters say, and I've heard them say, well, you know, I'm going to just play this game with them and I'm going to do this. Let me tell you, not fooling those white dominators. You are not tricking them. You're not playing. There was a movie, I think it's called In Too Deep, where he, this brother, he was an undercover agent. He pretended to be a drug addict or dealing drugs. And by the end of the movie, he was really strung out. So our people go in and they play this game. And before you know it, they are actually with the white dominators. So I said this.
Sure.
This is what I said. This is what I said in 1973. Don't get caught with the white people. I'm telling you, don't be caught with the white people. That's all I'm going to say about it. Mm-hmm. And I made up my mind. I had this interview one time. The guy said, oh, man, you know, you're really talented. And he's running all this stuff. And he said, all you got to do is wear a suit and tie. I decided then. I think I can't tell you the last time I put on a white tie, a tie or a suit. I don't wear European clothes. I don't wear them.
Mm-hmm.
So I made my decision. I'm not down with y'all. I'm not down with y'all. So these are some of the things that in this paradigm, if you can really understand the paradigm,
mm-hmm.
when you see this thing about the wrong concepts, it's there's one element in it entitled, what we do is we're doing things, but they're not relevant to black liberation. Mm-hmm. And then we rationalize, we lie to ourselves that, oh, yeah, this is part of it. You know, this is black liberation. Come on, man, you're lying to yourself. You know, you gotta clean it up. You got to wake up. So listen, sister, we're going to see millions of our people die.
That's right.
We're going to see millions die. And you won't have time to cry. You'll be so busy mm-hmm. burying black people.
Mm-hmm.
You won't have time to cry and lament because it'll be so sad, but you'll be so busy putting dirt over them
mm-hmm.
that you just won't have time. And this is what it's going to look like in the future. And I'm not coming just saying that because I don't get anything out of this saying this. But this is what mm-hmm. I'm seeing. And I'm seeing that our people are engaged in death. That most of what we do is death. Going to the concerts, partying, drinking alcohol, not supporting those institutions that we should be supporting, the black-owned mm-hmm. bookstores, the black cultural centers, you know, the work that you're doing. So I tell you what we do. I had a brother circle, and when we met, and I have a whole outline of what brothers should be doing psychologically, culturally, you know, all the different areas. And we raise some money, we collect a little fee. I would send part of the money to, there's a brother that had a talk show, and he was really mm-hmm. good. He was on for 3 hours. I'd send him a little money. He called me. He said, man, what, you know, I got this check. You know, what's going on? I got this money order. I said, hey, man, we like what you're doing. We support it. We should not have to beg our people to send us some money. That's ridiculous, man. Mm-hmm. This white guy, Mitt Romney, you go and look it up, about 2 or 3 months ago, had a fundraiser or declared his candidacy. The guy got $10 million in one day. Go and look it up. Mitt Romney, $10 million. And we got to say, oh, man, can you send us $5, $10? That's ridiculous.
Right.
But let me tell you, let me also say this, Queen, Empress, I don't have a cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have air conditioning. I don't have an MP3 player, an iPod. I don't have a TV. I don't have satellite. I told white people, keep all of that garbage. Keep it. I don't need it. I don't want it. Let me see what else don't I have. I don't have a car. I drive, you know, we got this old car. We got an old used car. I had a 1990 Toyota Camry. I had that thing for about 10 years, 15 years. Before that, I had a Datsun. So here I am, this big professor on campus. By the way, I received Professor of the Year award twice. I should have gotten it 3 times. The brother told me, oh, man, they're going to give it to somebody else, but you should have gotten it. So, I mean, I was really a very, very good professor on campus. Mm-hmm. All the students dug me. And but I was driving a Datsun.
They said, oh, man, you know, look at Professor so-and-so, you should be driving a this and that.
man. I said, let me tell you, if I'm a professor and I'm driving this, what does that tell you? So if you graduate and you are driving, you getting a new car, the college has failed you. You are an absolute failure. I remember seeing one of my former students. She ran up to me. This was like 15 years after she was in one of my classes. She said, oh, Dr. Kamon, oh, you know, you were one. I liked your class. She got blonde hair. I said, well, you must have failed my class. There's no way you could be standing here in front of me with no blonde hair. I had another sister that was going to come to work. We had this little program. She came. She got this blonde hair. I said, sister, you are not coming. You're not going to be leaving this building with blonde hair. Not representing us. No way. You have to go somewhere else with that till you get your mind together.
I know that's right.
So these
and,
are the
speaking of that, my brother, and then we're going to go to one of our callers and get your question or comment, or a couple of our callers, actually. For those of you who wish to ask our brother a question or you have a comment, please make sure you push 1 so that I can patch you in a few moments. But with that said, before we do that, what you just said just reminded me, of course, it was a beautiful event that we were able to attend a few weeks ago, the LOTS conference. But the one thing that I just could not seem to understand or overstand, and that was the beautiful sister that had locks but had dyed them blonde.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What was up with that?
Yeah, that's that subtle suicide I'm talking about. They love the white dominators. See, the white dominators. In one of my books, the last book, I said that the white dominators have gotten to us at the cellular level. There's a nice record by Ella Fitzgerald, I Got You Under My Skin. Listen to that. She said, I got you under my skin. But that is like what the white dominators have done to us. They're really under our skin. But she says in that, she gives us a message in there, in that side. She says, use your mentality, wake up to reality.
Reality.
Yeah, that's Ella Fitzgerald. So let me just finish the paradigm. I'll just give you the top. So we got genocide, democide, the wrong concept, and there are about 7 or 8 little aspects of the wrong concept. Subtle suicide, feedback is the next stream because we always get feedback on everything we do. And then after feedback is black liberation, and there are about 4 or 5 little things that come under black liberation. One, I created this word to de-whitenize. We have to de-whitenize in order to re-Africanize.
Wow.
And then next to black liberation, the last column is ratinization, R-A-T-I. And that means that we got rats in our race, and we have to figure out what to do with rats. What to do with the rats. So you come across and you look at this paradigm, and anything that happens on the planet, there's a spot. You say, oh, wow, that's subtle suicide. Oh, that's a wrong concept. Because this is very important. If I know something that you don't, you are at a disadvantage.
Mm-hmm.
See, so if somebody comes to me and I don't know that this person is a liar, I'm at a disadvantage. If this person is a thief and they come to me and I don't know the person is a thief, I'm at a disadvantage. But if I know what that person knows, like Malcolm said, then it's even Steven.
Mm-hmm.
You see? So this is why I created the paradigm, so you will know precisely when you hear something, you say, oh, that's why you got to watch the news, listen to the news, because it could be one little thing that could be the correct life-saving information to help you.
Mm-hmm.
So I say stay in the green zone, stay in the life zone, and stay out of the white death zone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll take some questions. Emperor.
Okay, we will do that in a few moments. And I just want to add before we do that one of the reasons why we're having this dialogue, family, is because we're talking about and dealing with solution orientations. And so with that said, we are dealing with problems. And I mean, that puts it mildly. So from a mathematical standpoint, when you're dealing with problems, obviously you have to come up with solutions. You have
right.
to come up with some way of solving those problems. So this is what we're talking about. We're talking about possibilities and solutions and formulas
mm-hmm.
that we can apply
right.
to these types of illnesses and other types of critical kinds of things. And so what you're hearing are the various types of suggestions that we are looking at to applying as formulas
mm-hmm.
with the idea of solutions. So we're going to go to, let's see, we're going to try the last digits of your phone number, caller, is 2603. We're going to patch into you, and hopefully you have a question or a comment for Brother Kamal.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, I certainly can.
Yes,
hello, Dr. Kamal. I remember when you had that Datsun B210, and I remember when you had that blue Camry.
What? Okay, yeah. You know, I don't give the white people no money, man. No money.
As a matter of fact, I think when I rode by, I think I had like an old Chevrolet that was like a 86 or 87 station wagon. Then we eventually got a Camry that was a 96 as well. So
yeah.
I remember seeing you when you had the bookstore. So it's good to see you and hear you again, Brother Kamal. This is Brother Darrell out of Raleigh.
Who is it?
Oh, hey, Brother Darrell.
Hey, how you doing? Dr. Kamal, how you doing, Black man?
Good.
Hey, you know, I've been linked up here between Raleigh and Durham with Brother Cimarron, and we're trying to stay active pretty much with fighting white supremacy here. You know, it's still inevitable that we're going to have to fight white supremacy no matter where it is and how we fight it.
Right.
But we have to take a combative stance, I believe, and I say this when we're at war with white supremacy, and that is an enemy of my enemy is my friend. And the reason why I say that is because they have different organizations out here, and you see these different protest groups, and you see different advocacy groups, and everybody's attacking, you know, the structure of what white supremacy stands for.
Right.
But and reducing casualties for African, that could be something that helps us.
Mm-hmm.
That helps us generate and reduces the lives that we're going to have to fight. Then another message I wanted to send out there, too, is that, you know, osteoporosis is something that weakens the structure of bone marrow within a certain race of people.
Mm-hmm.
And we know what race that is.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was always taught to me that the strength or the character of a race is measured by the character of its woman.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been dealing with a lot of chemical warfare, like you've been saying, with the chemicals that are pushed out here that are designed to break down our DNA, our minds. We have crack cocaine, we got heroin, we got salt, sugar. So you got all kind of mindsets out here. You got three deadly rocks, salt, sugar, and crack cocaine, all of them designed to break down the African DNA.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But
we have
not heard, you know, things that are sick of sale. And we know white folks are afraid of dying. You see them running all chipper, trying to stay alive and trying to stay healthy and eating all the right foods. You don't even hear white people eating pork that much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They're afraid of cancer and they're afraid of dying. But there's ways out there to make the warfare chemically balanced. But we need to expedite those processes when they go to get suntans.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I understand.
So, Brother Darrell, do you have a question or something else that you wanted to pose to our brother?
Yeah, I did. I wanted to talk to Dr. Kambaum because, you know, he's one of the brothers from my area. You know, I love that brother as well. You know, he's very supportive,
mm-hmm.
and many of us have had, you know, great relationships back before when other
mm-hmm.
people have come to Raleigh. But I wanted to enlighten or talk about an issue called those secret societies. Well, they're not made secret anymore, called the Boule
mm-hmm.
or the Sigma
mm-hmm.
Pi Phi, those black faces that think they're doing things on the white order and white structure. What
mm-hmm.
do we do with these type of coon Negroes?
Okay. Well, you know, Steve Coakley is the preeminent scholar on the Boule. He
mm-hmm.
was the first one to brought that forward. But that would go immediately. I put that under Ratinization. You see, so when you say something, that's where that goes. But
mm-hmm.
the other thing I think is also important is some things we should deal with on the other side of liberation.
Mm-hmm.
Because under the paradigm of the wrong concept, what happens is that there is one element called a paradox. And a paradox or dilemma, when we are engaged in a paradox or dilemma, we get stuck. We can't figure it out. And as we get stuck in that dilemma, we are derailed from our goal.
Mm-hmm.
You follow me? So some things, like a brother called me the other day, and he asked me a question, and I said, oh, I don't deal with that right now. I'll deal with that on the other side of Black liberation.
Mm-hmm.
You follow me? Because I'll be stuck. I'll be talking about this and talking about this. I had an incident where a brother asked me about Black English years ago when it was a big mm-hmm. issue in California. I said, man, I'm not going to stand here for 3 hours and talk to you about Black English. Because it's not changing anything. That's in
right.
California. Let's solve the problem. So my message is, there's a wonderful sister from Howard University, Dr. Gloria Dunstan. She's one of the top geneticists in the country, and she says that for every problem, there is a solution.
Right.
So I'm coming with this, that there is a solution to this problem, and we need to come up with a once-and-for-all solution to the biggest problem on planet Earth.
Mm.
Now, people will say, wow, how are we going to do that? That's impossible.
No,
and
not.
I'm saying... This brother made the statement. He said, a man with no imagination has no wings.
I think I understand exactly what you're saying. I think it's kind of like an actual saying. Let me sum it up if I get this right. It's like that drug dealer on the corner.
Mm-hmm.
If you take away the drug option from him selling it, he's no longer effective, and the people will not buy it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if you eliminate the one fascist option that people are oppressed by or used mostly, which is white supremacists, if you eliminate that,
right.
you give them the option of African liberation.
That's right. You take away a problem.
Sense.
You take away a problem. You solve a whole lot of problems. It'll you have a cascade of solutions automatically.
But are these Boule and Jack and Jill type Negroes, are they reformable? I mean, are they able to be liberated? Because their mindset is so entrenched and white domination. They do not fight white supremacy. They can't because they're a part of it.
Yeah, that's what we said. But I said, don't get caught with the white people. Let them go. Let them do what they're going to do. We are working on the solution to the problem.
So can we do something as far as like exposing them so we don't get caught by their words? Because then they're putting them
brother, places. They've been doing that garbage. They've been doing that garbage for years. Let them go. Let them go.
Okay.
Our goal is... As you well know, every liberation movement only started with four or five people. The concept of Pan-Africanism started with three men. Dr. Clark always talks about the C.L.R. James, George Padmore, and H. Sylvester Williams. And to this day, we're talking about Pan-Africanism. That's a concept. So Gloria Dunstan said, for every problem, there's a solution. She also makes a very profound statement, and we hear it all the time, but I think it hasn't really registered. She says, knowledge comes in time to solve problems. And I'm saying that we can solve this problem. People say, well, it's impossible. We can never solve this problem. Well, let me tell you, things that were once impossible are now
mm-hmm.
possible.
That's right.
For example, I bet we all have heard that light, let's see, nothing is faster than the speed of light.
Mm-hmm.
But now what we know is that there's been a discovery that is called neutrinos. Let me see, N-E-U-T-R-I-N-O-S. Look it up. These are particles that are faster than the speed of light.
That's right.
Not only that, the recent Nobel Prize winner in chemistry, of course, chemistry comes from the word chemist.
Right.
The recent Nobel Prize winner just discovered quasi-crystals.
Mm.
People were laughing at him. Oh, what are you doing? Yeah. Now this guy gets a Nobel Prize for discovering something that was there all the time. So I'm saying the solution is already in the universe. People say, well, what are you, Brother Kamau? You a Pan-Africanist? You a black nationalist? No, I'm a solutionarian. That's what I am. And the solution is in the universe, but the reason we haven't focused or come up with the solution is because we diverted into these other things, and it's taken away our, I don't call it our energy, our currency.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We are kinetic, chemical, electronic, electric energy. So we have been diverted. So I'm not going to get diverted into the Boule or all these different groups. Let them go.
Right.
We know that that's not the truth. How do I know it's not the truth? Because they said, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. And since we're not free, that can't be what they're doing, can't be the truth.
Right.
You understand?
Right.
So leave them, man. Let them go. They will come. This is an expression that says, you will know the truth of what you have done when you are done. So if they have been doing whatever they're doing for 30, 40, 50, 60 years, it hasn't produced liberation, we know it's not the truth.
So time takes care of all.
Yeah, so let them go. Let them go. This is why we got to focus on the solution to the problem. Focus on the solution to the problem.
Yeah, that is part of my problem, because I do get caught up a lot in fighting, thinking I'm looking for somebody that's going to do something or help in a situation, and realizing it later that they're put there for a purpose, and that purpose is to basically keep the, you know, somatic things going.
Right. Keep your energy. Keep your energy
right.
Tied up. Let them go. And I got a great piece in one of my books. It says, there's a word, getters, G-E-T-T-E-R-S. Getters is those who get. Now listen to the statement. Don't get caught by the getters of those who already got God. So really is don't get got by the getters of those who already got God. Now, there's a brother that I know I greatly admire, and he rails against religion. Oh, you know, Christianity, oh, da da. But see, not only have they gotten God, but he got God, because he's spending his energy on that.
Mm-hmm.
So don't get got by the getters of those who already got God. Your mission is a deeper mission. Our mission is a deeper mission. I'm going to give you this last scenario. I remember looking at Matt Dillon, Gunsmoke, years ago. And this Matt Dillon went out of town, and this criminal came in town. He was just, you know, beating up people and shooting the town up. And Chester, of course, he couldn't do anything. And then Marshall comes back, and the bad guy, they're chasing the bad guy. So as they're chasing the bad guy on horseback, the bad guy turns around, and he shoots, and he hits Chester. Chester falls down. The marshal stops, jumps down, says, okay, Chester, I got to take you back to town. Chester says, no, I'm okay. Go and get him, because if he gets away, he's going to wreak havoc on the whole area. So to me, Chester represents black people.
Mm-hmm.
So I have this expression. I say you have to get the white dominators before they escape into the next generation of our children.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that I'm coming to the planet to say this to African people. There is a solution to the problem.
Mm-hmm.
We just haven't discovered it. And then the last piece dealing with that is that there was I listen to Science Friday, comes on NPR, because you know I like everything, oceanography, mm-hmm. space, science, everything,
because
mm-hmm. everything could be relevant to finding
right.
the key to liberation. So Ira Flatow is interviewing this scientist. The scientist says, yeah, you know, I just discovered this planet, and he's breaking all this stuff down about this planet. So I'm listening to the guy. He said, hey, man, how's this guy discovering the planet? The planet was always there. He just discovered it. But the planet been up there maybe millions of years. The solution is there.
Mm-hmm.
The solution is there. The solution is probably, it might be in you, Daryl.
Gotcha.
See, the solution might be in you. And how do I know? It's probably in a brother. And I know this because I see what the white dominators are doing. They stop at brothers. They're getting their photos. They're getting their fingerprints.
Yep.
Now they're getting their DNA. They're doing retina scans.
Yeah.
Right? Why are they doing that? Because they know it's like a guard. And say if you're in a prison and the guard is up on the tower. He's looking down at 200 prisoners. Do you think that guard is saying to himself, none of them are thinking about escaping?
Mm-hmm.
He knows that somebody down there is thinking about escaping. If you saw that movie, Shankshaw Redemption,
mm-hmm.
The one guy, everybody else is, you know, yeah, we're in prison. This guy was slowly digging his way out. So he had a solution to the problem.
And there's two more things. There's one thing I'm not sure if you're familiar of that's been a real big thing. It's going on across the cities, but it's called the Mandingo Party.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Mandingos is tribal named after the African warrior.
Right.
So what this do is you have the Caucasian male and female relationships now. They're going out and they're starting in these little club areas where they intermingle with black people, African black males. And they're using black men to have sex with their white wives.
Mm-hmm.
And in the process of doing that, they're showing and trying to create an atmosphere where the white female is no longer threatened or intimidated by the black male. And they're often using their semen to try to do DNA research for how they can use to cure themselves.
Right, sure. Mm-hmm. Yep. Listen.
And then I'm sorry, before I go, and the second thing is, there is no race of people on this earth that have not been screwed, killed, or ostracized other than outside of the white race. I mean, the white race has pretty much dominated every other race.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't understand why we can't all come together against him.
Mm-hmm.
There's not one company that hasn't had some type of scrutiny that's basically white-owned, and there's nothing that the white man has ever done that's not under scrutiny. He has screwed every other fashion of people from Chinese, Indian, African, Hispanic, Latino. He has screwed everybody.
Right.
So
okay.
That just shows you how foul he really is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, brother. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
All right, Brother Daryl. Thank you again.
All right, brother, sister, or
all
queen,
right.
Or empress.
Okay. Okay, let's see. If someone else wishes to ask a question or have a comment, by all means, please let us know. You could push on your keypad 1, and then I can know that you are
Empress,
interested.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't want to go back over things that we already talked about.
Sure.
I remember a brother asked Dr. Clark a question, and in the question, the young brother started to give a lecture about history. Dr. Clark stopped him. He said, hey, he said, I'm the teacher. I know this already. See, so a brother called me the other day. He's breaking down all this stuff. I said, hey, man, you're telling me stuff I already know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking for the solution. In fact, I know the solution. We just don't know how to implement it. You understand what
That's
I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So So my life time is important because I know I got an expiration date. We all got an expiration date.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to use my lifetime as efficiently as I can because I know that I got this expiration date. Okay.
You know, I think it's so important. So much has been said tonight, and we're going to continue this dialogue. For those who don't know, we are, of course, going over our regular time. We're going to go up to 12:30, and we're going to have this dialogue. We're going to have more of this dialogue in the very near future. We want to remind you, of course, that if you're in the Philadelphia area, please come out and join us. for our first kickoff, you might as well say, for the Brothers Only segment. This particular segment is, in fact, the first one that we have. It will be in Philadelphia, but it is our intention to take this on the road, to take it to wherever our people may want to have it. We're prepared to go there. The idea is for black men to come together to specifically talk about the issue of violence and abuse of our women and girls, and what our men, what our brothers can do, will do, to focus on the prevention as well as to help deal with the healing that is now necessary. Some are asking, well, why are you just focusing on the women? Why are you just focusing on the female? Well, I'm not going to even take the time to answer that tonight. I think most of you already have an idea as to why, with the women being, of course, the first teacher. Also, needless to say, that this is an issue that for many years has been pushed underneath the carpet, to say the least, and certainly one that most men don't want to talk about. We have seen that in the past couple of weeks with the lack of registration from brothers, and we just want them to know that this is not, again, let me reiterate, this is not a bash you session. This is not something to demonize or to criticize or anything of that nature. That's not the posture or the position that we're taking, and that's one of the reasons why we invited Brother Kamal and Brother Wally Mubarudi and Brother Alton Maddox, because our position is we just want our men to stand up and do what men do, which is to defend and protect. And these are three brothers who have certainly indicated that in their work as well as in their personal lives. And we certainly appreciate that and want other men in our community to see that as well. And also, you know, I won't say to use it as an example, but certainly, as we said earlier, each one does, in fact, teach one. So with that said, Brother Kamal, before we close out for tonight, one thing I would be remiss if we did not talk about this at least briefly, and that is why you have become perhaps public enemy number one to the white man.
Well, I think that's hard to that's hard to answer. I think I wrote a very good article years ago entitled, I have to paraphrase it because it was about 10 years ago, the something about the New World Order and the rise of the Black Messiah. And the end of it, and this is in one of my books, at the end of it said that we are all, meaning all the brothers, are the Black Messiah. And we just don't know it. And I think that we really just have to start learning more and more as we de-whitenize and we get greater clarity, we'll get closer to the solution to the problem. So I've just, now a couple of things I do want to say is that psychology is very important. And one of the things I do not say white supremacy. Because white people are not supreme. They dominate by the use of terror and deceit. So psychologically, we never want to subordinate ourselves to anyone else. That's why I never refer to rich white people as elite. What makes them elite? That they have a jet plane or a mansion. I saw this article a while back. There was a house or mansion for sale for $750 million. Okay, so you got a house for $750 million. To do what in? This is what you're doing with money? So they are not elite. They are, I call them, sleazy. That's what it is. It's sleazy. And the last part I want to mention, I want to emphasize, especially for these young brothers, that the only nigger on planet Earth, two, is the white man and the white woman. Because a nigger is anybody that can destroy air, that has the power to destroy and pollute water, that can destroy people, to exploit land, people, and resources. So we are not niggers. And if you understand psychology at all, you'll know that the ones that invented that name, they were engaged in what's called projection. They were really describing themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So we are not niggers. The closest we can be is an imitation nigger. So let's drop. And, yeah, I don't even want to waste my time talking about that. You know, but I hear, and now in the paradigm, if I could go through it, the paradigm on the wrong concept, we have mixed messages. We have mixed messages. And so we hear a lot of these brothers in hip-hop, we talk about we RBG, then the niggas,
right.
They talk about they niggas. So that's,
right.
Hey, that's confusing. Hey, so let's, you know, that's part of de-whitenizing, you know, dropping all of that stuff. So why am I public enemy number one? I'm not. We all are an enemy, because what really makes us an enemy is that we're not falling for the foolishness. We're not falling for the diversion, that we are looking for the solution to the problem. And the last thing they want you to do is think. The last thing they want you to do is to be a thinker, a critical thinker. Making comparative analysis. Oh, they don't want that. So you start thinking, hey, you are dangerous. You are very dangerous. But as long as you're in the basketball and you're watching the game and you know all the scores and who scored this and that and you're at the party, hey, the white dominators, they love you. You know, you got your rims. Oh, wow. You're getting high. You know, last poet said, oh, you should get high and ride to hell. But hey, we tell you, the white dominators brought the drugs and alcohol. So what does that tell you? If they put it here and they hate you, what are they telling you? So I think all the brothers and the sisters, all of our people really are public enemy. If you look at Mumia, Jamil Alamin, you know, he's in jail on a bogus charge. Asada Shakur, she's in Cuba in so-called exile. We got all the black political prisoners, Russell Schultz. You know, we got all these political prisoners. We got the Move family in prison for all this time. So it's across the board. The cops shooting young brothers in the back. So hey, it's not a singular thing. It's all of us. It's all of us. And if we come to that realization, you know, Kwame Ture always talked about we got to organize.
Yes, he did.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm saying that that's true, but I'm saying it a little differently. What we need is conceptual unification.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we all stand in one place, say, oh, we're unified. No. Because we're all in one place, but we all got different concepts.
Sure.
But what we need is conceptual unification, meaning that we all have to focus on the solution to the problem. And if we can build the pyramids and you can't even slide a little dime through the stone, we can do that, and we can discover Sirius B, and we can do all of these things. I mean, tell me, we can't defeat a third-grade Neanderthal? Come on, man. The reason we can't do it is because we're not focusing on it. We're doing everything else. So I'm saying, yo, let's drop all of this. Let's drop all this. You can do that on the other side of the solution. But let's do this first. First things first, not first things second. So
before we close out for tonight, we're going to take one more call. Caller, let's see, your last digits are 6772. Do you have a comment or a question for our brother? Hold on, let's go.
Peace.
Okay, there you are. Yes, peace to you, sister. How are you this evening?
Peace. This is Sister T. I have a couple of questions and maybe two comments.
Sure.
First, I wanted to say, don't get caught with the white man. I love that slogan because that's my problem. I have a problem that has been created by the white man, is controlling my life.
Mm-hmm.
And at this time, everybody has had that concept, oh, it's a white man's fight, so you need to fight it with a white man. And I'm in a situation where I'm going to get caught with the white man, and if I think that statement means what I think it means I'm going to get thrown down the poo-poo chute because white people play white people games with black people lives.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And then there was another one when it says, for every problem, there's a solution.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. At this time, my problem is bigger than I feel like my solution, and it's not working because, once again, I'm getting caught with the white man.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know how to express exactly how you would say politically, I can't be politically right when I express the situation that I'm in. I can just be straight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, my response to that is that I met a very fabulous attorney years ago in the early 70s, and I had a couple of friends, and we were trying to start a little corporation for ourselves because we were trying to, you know, quit these little jobs and work for ourselves. And one of the things the brother said that always stuck with me, he said that what you do is you go on your job and you pretend everything is okay. But when you leave that job, you go and you work to build your own infrastructure. So you go on your job, and let me tell you, white people watch you on your job. They watch what car you drive. They watch what kind of watch you have on. So I tell people, don't have your family or your friends on your computer screen. None of that. Don't give them any information. Don't bring any of your conscious books to work. Don't engage in any discussion with them about anything. But save your little bit of money. Save your money. Go to work. Save your money. Get your survival kit together and tap into those things that you need to do for yourself. So you understand that when something happens, you're not out there on a limb because you were caught with them. Because they'll walk in on you in a minute and say, okay, your job is over.
Okay. Now, to be a little bit more specific, my problem is it's a legal issue.
Mm-hmm.
Where pretty much I was with a friend of mine who I thought I knew, and he had got caught with the police. He took fault for everything. I was released. And then the white man turned around and figured, oh, we're not going to let the black girl get away. And they came back with bogus charges a year and 2 months later.
Mm-hmm.
I've been fighting this case for 3 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And all they can tell me is, come down here and we'll get everything solved. Where I already know that there's a trap set for me because they're going to be right whether they're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a white lawyer that is doing exactly what white people do when it comes down to traditional system and a black client or black female or male. We always get sold out. And when you state how people like Mamua is still in jail and everybody who's been done wrong, they're just sitting in jail because they were caught with a white man in a white man's game.
Mm-hmm.
Once a white man gets your Social Security number, he feels like he can dominate you. And that's the reason why a lot of times we feel like our Social Security number is our identification. No, it's not. And they always use anger against us, and I am a victim of that. 2 weeks ago, I was doing some work for Sister Empress Chi, and it was doing something simple as getting ads from black businesses and owners that I know personally and patronize personally. And all I needed them to do was give me $35 so I can help them promote their business and help them network and make their life more prosperous and still keeping the money in the black community. And out of 2 weeks of begging black people to help them, I got discouraged. Not only did I get discouraged for what I was doing for Empress Chi, but I got discouraged in my own situation because I'm trying to help black people get their self together so maybe I can run into somebody that can help me.
Mm-hmm.
But then they don't want to help themselves, and I'm still leaning on this white man that's ready to sell me out for a bag of chips today or tomorrow. And if not, whenever I'm ready to play. And I have paid him to sell me out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my question to you is, do you have any professional black lawyers that can deal with a case that you know of that won't be a sellout? Because we have a lot of those also.
Right. There's a website you can go to, National Black Lawyers Association. It's and they have an 800 number. You can call them, and they tell you on their site that their goal is the liberation of African people, National Black mm-hmm. Lawyers. And they have, actually I was working with a sister in, I think it's New Mexico or somewhere, who did get a lawyer through them. So that would be the suggestion that I give. Check with them and see what they can do.
Okay.
Okay, and they have these lawyers just all over the country, or in mm-hmm. most areas.
And also, back on the anger thing, black people have been brainwashed to get angry because the white man has studied and realized that once people get angry, there's a chemical that releases in the brain that's supposed to protect the brain, and it makes you dumb. And every time you get angry, you lose a cell. And they have mastered that with us. And then they give us medication to claim that it's going to help us, which that medication doesn't do anything but make you a zombie, so yet you be their puppet.
Mm-hmm.
I say this because I also suffer with this illness, and it took me over 12 years to realize this medication is not doing anything but helping them keep me in check.
Right, right. So we tell everybody, don't take any drugs, no drugs at all, mm-hmm. in any form, period, end of story. No drugs, no vaccines, no flu shots.
Mm-hmm.
None
and
of
to
that.
Get back to black people being, I think he's called it whitenized.
De-whitenized.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to de-whitenize something that has already. That's like going to someone and saying the retarded behavior is normal. And they say, you're right. But if you call them retarded, they get offended. Everybody thinks retarded is because it's not whitenized or... The sister said that she loved the sister dreads, but they were blind. For the first time, she realized that her hair can grow without the chemicals. Mm-hmm. And as soon as she received the hair, she wanted to blind it, mm-hmm. to have natural blind hair. That's something that we all work with in ourselves. Because we're always given retarded information for right information. And we're always given retarded information to be normal.
That's why, sister, you got to get with people that got the knowledge. And then, you know, I also said that our people invented the phrase, I ain't trying to hear it.
So you got to pick your battle. Right. We said you come with correct information. Say, oh, I ain't trying to hear that. Change your diet. Oh, I ain't trying to hear that. Don't get high. Oh, I ain't trying to hear that. Okay, well, I just say, yo, go ahead. You'll find out whether what you're doing is the truth or not.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you, like I said before, you will be done. You will know that you have done the truth when you're done. Or even before you're done, you'll know, well, hey, this is not the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I have not been doing the truth. I've been doing stuff, but it's not the truth. So you got to get the information. The other thing I want to mention that I didn't mention is that I have this, I created a whole paradigm called the Black Tricks. It's on a BB to Mikasa, and it's in every area of human activity, psychological, cultural, economic, educational, spiritual, and it lists the things that we should be doing. And when you go through this Black Tricks, at the end of each day, you can add up everything you thought or did, all your actions, you can add them up and you can see whether you, when I say you, I'm talking about the general you, you can add up and see whether you have been supporting white domination or whether you've been supporting
mm-hmm.
black liberation. It's called the Black Tricks. It's on the BB to Mikasa. So we got all that.
Say it one more time. Can you spell it for me?
www.abitumikasa.com, a BB to Mikasa. You go to the bookstore and you can see the list of my books. And these are electronic books. These are not hard copy. These are electronic books. And you can get them that way. And I also have a website that was just created, KamalKanban.org, and I do accept contributions.
Spell that for me, please.
KamalKanban.org.
Okay.
And I want everybody to send contributions to Empress Chi for the work that she is doing and for her organization. Don't let that slide. If you, instead of buying potato chips and Fritos and ice cream and you're paying your cell phone bill and your video games, take that money and send it to an organization that is meaningful, that is working on your behalf.
Yes, and that's another thing that I wanted to say. I can't say enough good things about Sister Empress Chi because we had spoke the other day. And I explained to her that when someone does something for you, it's not for you. It's for every black person that you help
mm-hmm.
and every organization that you put your input in. And when people say, well, I don't like her for this or she's not that, it's not about her. It's what she stands for.
Mm-hmm.
And she stands for more than enough. And when it comes down to black women, and it was a question, and she said she can spend hours talking about it, and I can sum it up. The reason why she worked for black women is because black women are always the target because we are the strongest being that is a surviving being at this time. Because whenever a man is weak, he's always looking for a woman. Because mm-hmm. a woman is a pillar of life. A woman is an easy prey because a man feels like if I can just trick her, I can get everything out of her. We are builders. We are producers. We are multipliers. Whatever you give us, we multiply it by 10, regardless of what it is, good or bad. And that's why she looks out for us because everybody thinks that, oh, well, you should be supporting men. The men do have support. They have one another. But women is the hardest thing to bring together. And she does a great job in doing it.
Yeah, she does. She does.
Oh,
you're right on
you
point.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
All right, well, we have run out of time. And, of course, we're going to see our brother and his beautiful wife when they come into Philadelphia October 28th, 29th. we're going to talk about these issues. We're going to talk about not just it as being issues, but the reality of what we're going to do about healing our family, about rebuilding our community, and certainly this whole idea of liberation. It's more than just an idea. It's more than just a notion. It is, in fact, a way of life, mm-hmm. at least for some of us. With that said, family, we have run out of time. We've already lost the internet stream. Of course, those who are still on the telephone, we have you, but we invite you to come back next week. Of course, we will be black, and we're going to bring Brother Kamal back on very, very soon. And again, we will be here in Philadelphia for the Brothers Only Conference coming up the 28th, 29th. Joining us will also be Brother Nwali Mubaruti, who will be on our radio program tomorrow. We'll be doing a special session at 9:30, so please join us again. And we will be back next week, same time, Saturday, 10:30. Sister T, thank you so much for your comments and your kind words and, you know, continued growth, continued development, and, you know, just, you know, keep getting stronger, Sister. You're going to be okay. And certainly, Brother Kamal, I thank you for taking the time to join us tonight, and also the callers and the listeners. You know, we thank all of you. Our program is growing rapidly, I'm telling you. So we're very thankful for that. And again, we'll be back tomorrow night with a special edition at 9:30 with Brother Nwali Mubaruti. Brother Kamal, give us your closing words, please.
Well, I say that I like to quote Stephen Biko from South Africa, who started the Black Consciousness Movement.
Yes.
He says that it is better to die for an idea that will live than to live for an idea that will die. And black liberation is the idea that will always live. And Chairman Fred Hampton said, you can kill the revolutionary, but you can't kill the revolution.
No doubt.
I say that you can kill the revolutionary, but you can't kill the concept of the once and for all solution to the biggest problem on planet Earth.
Absolutely, absolutely. Remind all of you again, if you wish to communicate with us at any point, please feel free to do so by emailing us at nationalmwm@aol.com, or you can call us, area code 267-636-3802. And also for the Brothers Only Conference, you can now register online. So if you email us, we'll send you that information as well. All right, family, we have run out of time again, but we hope that tonight's dialogue has, in fact, been not only helpful to you, but inspirational and definitely motivational, because that is what our program is about. It's not just about conversation and talk. It's really about taking what you hear and then apply it to something that is, in fact, going to make a difference, and we are responsible for doing that. So until the next time we're able to connect, we are going to leave you with the idea and the concept of Ma'at Hotep. Of course, we say Ma'at Hotep because there can be no justice without peace, and there certainly will be no peace without justice. Until next week, Tuta and Nana. Brother Kamal, thank you again.
Okay, thank you also.
Okay, peace out, y'all.
Peace. Right, like liberation.
Thank you again.
Thank you.